Welcome. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. $38 million. That's how much Big Oil spent in 2024 attempting to shape statewide policy measures in California on climate change and environmental justice. That's according to The Last Chance Alliance. $6.6 million of that amount was spent in the fourth quarter alone. The total shatters the annual state lobbying record for the oil and gas industry by 31%, which had stood at $26.2 million back in 2017. At the same time, climate change is wreaking havoc in the state. The devastating January fires in Los Angeles County, which were driven in part by climate change, damaged or destroyed over 7,800 structures in the Palisades fire, almost 10,500 structures in the Eaton fire, and claimed the lives of 29 Californians. AccuWeather estimated that the total damage plus the broader economic slowdown would add up between $250 and $275 billion, which would make the 2025 fires the costliest natural disaster in U.S. history. And a study recently released by World Weather Attribution found that climate change...
All right, I'm going to apologize for the audio difficulties. Hopefully you can all hear me. I want to introduce Ryan Schleter, Communications Director for the Climate Center, working to build the movement for a climate-safe California. Welcome to the program, Ryan.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. And let me just adjust my audio here as we're working through these technical difficulties. Appreciate folks' patience here on the line. I also want to welcome to the program Christina Scarinch, California Climate Policy Director at the Center for Biological Diversity, at the Center for Biological Diversity Climate Law Institute. Christina, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. And let me start by just talking a little bit about the Last Chance Alliance. It's an alliance of more than 900 public health, environmental justice, climate, and labor organizations. And I know that both of your organizations are part of the alliance. It's really an impressive coalition of grassroots and nonprofit organizations. And maybe just starting with you, Ryan, before we dive in and talk about the analysis on big oil spending, can you just talk about the Last Chance Alliance and your work addressing the ongoing climate crisis here in California?
Absolutely. Well, the Climate Center, the organization that I work for, we're a California-based nonprofit focusing on climate and energy policy at the state level. And we work very closely with the Last Chance Alliance Coalition, which, as you said, is a large coalition focused on oil and gas extraction related issues. And I've been fortunate enough to work with the Last Chance Alliance Coalition for several years now, actually, even before I joined the Climate Center. And we've seen the sort of the momentum and the focus behind the Alliance's mission grow. And, you know, to see thousands and thousands of Californians get involved and excited about holding big oil accountable and really shifting from the state perpetuating, you know, big oil pollution in our communities, polluting our climate, to holding those corporations accountable. And that's what we're here to talk about today.
Well, I really appreciate it, Ryan. And Christina, I just also wanted to give you an opportunity just to talk about your involvement in the Alliance and a bit more about your work in general on climate policy.
Yes, thank you. The Center for Biological Diversity has been a member of the Last Chance Alliance for a long time. Like Ryan's group, we're very dedicated to addressing the needs of Californians, especially as we see a federal administration that is coming in and playing games with our environmental justice laws and our environmental laws and our disaster response recovery. What we're hearing more and more from Californians is that what is California going to do to protect California values like these?
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the recent analysis here and the amount of money that the oil and gas industry is spending to delay or stop environmental and climate justice legislation that would ultimately hurt its bottom line. And according to the report in the Last Chance Alliance document, lobbying and influence spending disclosures show that Big Oil spent $6.6 million in the fourth quarter of last year. And as I mentioned, that brings the annual price tag to a record-shattering $38 million. Can you just talk about some of the key findings in the report? And Ryan, I'll let you lead off on that one. What are some of the sort of top-line findings from your work here?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, the influence of money in politics broadly, sort of what corporate influence looks like in politics today. And this is, I think, one of the most illustrative examples out there, the way that the oil industry uses its wealth and power to maintain its wealth and power, no matter what the cost is for the people of California. Mm-hmm. And so when you break down that $38 million total, there's a couple of things that stand out. First are the biggest spenders. So within, you know, the sort of entire oil industry contributions to lobbying, two stick out. One is the Western States Petroleum Association, which is the oil industry's largest trade group or front group, essentially, in California. And they account for almost half of the spending last year. And the other is Chevron, which has for a long time been the state's largest polluter, largest contributor to climate change. And the two of them account for over $30 million of the lobbying money spent last year. And they're also, of course, some of the most outspoken voices in Sacramento, trying to influence politicians to get their way, even if it goes against the will of the people of California, as Christina was talking about earlier.
Yeah, and Christina, were there any specific pieces of legislation that the oil and gas industry seemed to have their sights on in 2024 when they spent all this money?
Yeah, and the good news coming out of that is that they, despite their wealth and their power, we're seeing their failures. So they like to tout their successes. So they took straight aim at the ballot with a ballot initiative to try to kill a setbacks law that was really hard fought and hard won and pulled out of that. They also took direct aim at a package of bills that largely succeeded last year that included a Superfund bill, which is back stronger than ever this year, as well as a bill to return oversight from local governments who want to, it was the AB 3233, the Local Environmental Choice and Safety Act, which was to safeguard what was really longstanding local authority to regulate or phase out oil and gas operations in their jurisdiction. And another, that bill succeeded and is now law. Then there was another bill that they took aim at, which was Assemblymember Hart's 1866, which was to hold oil companies accountable to work on oil and gas cleanup. There's a $21 billion liability out there for all these oil and gas wells throughout California that aren't really producing much, but they are polluting our neighborhoods and our communities. And so this legislation was to try to chip away at that liability for Californians.
Well, Christina, it's interesting that their efforts, even though they were spending records amount of money, weren't necessarily successful in all cases. Ryan, what's your take on the amount of money that they spent in terms of their return on investment? I mean, given that Christina mentioned these pieces of legislation that they were targeting ultimately did pass, do you think that this money was not well spent and for their narrow bottom lines here?
Yeah, you know, to me, it shows just how high the stakes are. And how much I think big oil sees the writing on the wall in a lot of ways. They understand that public opinion has turned against them, that a lot of the sort of solutions, that whether it's legislation or other policy measures that they're fighting against, when you really break it down, they're super common sense things. I mean, one of the bills that did pass that Christina was talking about, just reaffirming the authority of local governments to regulate oil and gas drilling in their jurisdiction. That shouldn't be a fight, you know? So yes, they're not succeeding in blocking everything, but they are, you know, they're requiring groups like ours to use a lot of our resources to fight against them. And they're also, like I said, they're maintaining their political influence. They're maintaining the ability to receive state subsidies and tax breaks. Big oil receives hundreds of millions in dollars in state subsidies every year. They probably don't need that money on top of what they already have to spend on lobbying. So it's really like a systemic and entrenched system that we have to chip away at over time, or hopefully make huge strides in confronting this year so that we can spend our time focusing on how to make climate solutions a reality, not just fighting the architects of the climate crisis at every turn.
And Ryan, is this in a way a comprehensive look at how they use money to influence politics? I mean, I would assume they're also involved in direct campaign contributions, you know, apart from legislative lobbying. I mean, how extensive is their sort of effort and resources to be able to thwart climate legislation that hurts their bottom line?
Certainly, this is just a slice. The direct lobbying expenditures are just one window. I think it's a very powerful window in, but it is just one window into the way that oil and gas corporations and their lobbyists and their front groups and their AstroTurf organizations, you know, it's a whole industry for them, how they manipulate public opinion and how they manipulate the political system to preserve their ability to profit, you know, profit for a few at the expense of many.
And Christina, in terms of the oil and gas industry's sort of sway within the legislature, I understand right now Democrats do hold a supermajority in both houses in California, the California legislature, both the Assembly and the Senate. So can you talk a little bit about the dynamics with that supermajority of, you know, what is should be a political party that would be in favor of climate action, how that kind of dollar amount that big oil is bringing to the table might influence even Democrats within the supermajority?
Yeah, and I would also add to what Ryan was saying before that remember that these efforts have bought them 70 plus years of delay. Right. So they have been really successful. We could have already transitioned to a more just and a more cost efficient and a more economical energy system by now, but for them. But as far as the California legislature goes, as you know, we are an oil producing state, though oil production is down, and that is less about policy and more about geology. Oil demand is also down in this state, but we are fighting particular legislators that are still bound by the influence of the fossil fuel industry. We're seeing a lot of pushback in the state, though. Californians, especially after the fires, want to know who is going to pay for this. Right now, Californians are the ones that are bearing the burden, even as we're subsidizing our own destruction. You know, as Ryan mentioned, we're spending billions in subsidies to pay for these companies. The U.S. Senate Budget Committee noted about $646 billion every year in the U.S. in subsidies and externalities for these companies. So they are benefiting with tax loopholes. That report also noted California tax loopholes that benefit them. That means $146 million in lost revenues for the state. And they are benefiting from subsidies, and they are benefiting by gouging folks at the gas pump. So we have a lot of work to do, even in a state that likes to consider itself a climate leader. We have a lot of work to do on both sides of the aisle.
Well, we're speaking with Christina Scaringe, a California Climate Policy Director at the Center for Biological Diversity and the Climate Law Institute. And we're also speaking with Ryan Schlieder, the Communications Director for the Climate Center, working to build the movement for a climate-safe California. This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. We're talking about the impact and influence of big oil and their record spending amount on lobbying in California back in 2024, just concluded 2024, $38 million that the industry spent. We also want to open up the phone lines and hear from you. If you live near an oil and gas refinery or oil and gas production facilities and are concerned about the impact that big oil has on our politics, if you have thoughts about what should be done about the influence of big oil in delaying and thwarting climate legislation in California, the number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to yourcall@kalw.org. And Ryan, we've heard from Christina a bit about what the oil and gas's lobbying dollars have been able to accomplish for them. I'm just wondering your take on that as well. Have there been any notable pieces of legislation that didn't make it in California in recent years that you might attribute to the impact of big oil lobbying dollars?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing to note is they fight everything, whether or not it's their top priority or, you know, a big, bold piece of legislation. they fight everything. And I think Christina's point about buying themselves 70 years of delay is really important, because it's not always about winning the fight. Sometimes it is about delay and about tying up resources in the fight. So that's one thing I would note. The other thing is I think the most notable piece of legislation from 2024 that they were able to kill, which was a big lobbying focus, was the Climate Superfund Act, which was just reintroduced for this year's legislative session on Friday, which is very exciting. So the basic idea behind that bill is that, oil and gas companies would pay into a super fund, kind of like what we have for other environmental justice issues. They would pay into a super fund based on the amount of climate pollution that they've emitted. And that fund could then be used to pay for things like recovery from the LA fires, to pay for climate solutions. The way that the legislation has been proposed, it would emphasize supporting, working class communities, frontline communities, communities that are really already dealing with the effects of oil and gas pollution and climate disasters and have been for generations. And I think that's really, really important, because when you look at something like the LA fires, as you mentioned, Ethan, the price tag is estimated around $250 billion in damages. And the state's budget, the entire state budget for everything in the state of California for 25-26 is $320 billion. So even the fifth largest economy in the world can't pay for the cost of rebuilding from this climate disaster on its own. And if we stick taxpayers with that burden, it's only going to become harder and harder for working families to live a decent life in California. And that's not what anybody wants. And so I think holding the corporations responsible, financially accountable, and finally saying, hey, you have to pay up for the damages that you've caused and the harm that you've caused to Californians is going to be, certainly that's going to be one of the biggest stories to follow of 2025.
Well, Ryan, I'm glad you mentioned that bill, the sort of polluter pays bill for the damages that we've seen from climate change. Christina, anything you wanted to add about that bill and any other legislation that's been introduced this year that you think we should keep our eye on that are likely to be in the sights of big oil?
Yeah, well, the California Climate Superfund is our top priority this year. I would add, since you're in the Bay Area, it's been estimated that it's going to cost about $110 billion to protect your residents in the Bay Area from sea level rise. So we are looking at hundreds of billions of dollars, but it's a tiny fraction. And as Ryan noted, it would be very meaningful to the state. When you think about all that we'll be able to do with that $10 billion climate bond, think about what we could do with the tens of billions that we could get from the Superfund. But this is just a tiny bit of these companies' profits. BP, Shell, Chevron, and Exxon have profited $2 trillion since 1990. $2 trillion. So even if we were to get $100 billion, New York's similar law that just passed is asked for $75 billion. So even if we were to get $100 billion, we're not even talking about 5% of these companies' profits just since 1990. And California's already done something like this before. California, back in the 1990s, assessed fees against lead paint providers and leaded gas providers, and then used those fees to help pay for childhood lead poisoning prevention and recovery. So we've done something like this before. And right now, Californians are looking to the state to say, who's going to pay for this? Because without a bill like this, it is on the backs of California taxpayers. And we are talking about hundreds of billions of dollars on the backs of California taxpayers.
Well, we'll certainly be keeping our eye on that legislation. And also just wanted to note that this is not just a California challenge. Big Oil spent $450 million to influence Donald Trump and Republicans throughout the 2024 election cycle, as a new analysis by Climate Power has revealed. And also just noting how they have been trying to influence media as well. In 2023 and 2024, the Western States Petroleum Association, which is the largest and most powerful corporate lobbying group in California and the West, sponsored several dinners and award receptions for journalists. And Ryan, I want to see if you had any thoughts on this, on how the oil and gas industry is not just doing traditional lobbying, but trying to shape media narratives too about their role in society and climate change.
Yeah, it's all part of the playbook. And you know, a lot of this goes back to even the like the early days of the oil industry, back in the 60s, 70s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, when scientists working at Exxon and other corporations first discovered that their products, that oil and gas, would lead to the climate crisis. They had an opportunity to bring that information to the public and to be we could begin transitioning to cleaner, safer energy. But instead, they decided to keep that all a secret, and they hatched, you know, many different plans and schemes to sort of mislead the public, to sow doubt about climate science. There is even a document that you can, you know, if you search for the Global Climate Science Communications Action Plan, you can find corporations like Exxon, Chevron, Shell, BP collaborating as far back as the 1970s and 80s. To use media and public opinion to cast doubt around climate science. And a lot of the tactics they identified, you know, going on talk shows, you know, trying to pay quote unquote, you know, doubting scientists to spread misinformation, it's still the playbook. It's always been the playbook. And again, like we said earlier, they don't necessarily have to win. They don't necessarily have to convince people that they're right. All they have to do is kick the can down the road far enough that they continue profiting and the world continues burning. And so that's really what I think people, especially in California, have woken up to in the last few years. They're tired of hearing the same lies, and they're tired of being stuck with the costs of oil and gas pollution, whether that's climate change or pollution in their communities, their air, their water. And you know, I think people are turning. Saw the Prop 4 last year, what Christina mentioned, passed in a landslide. It was never really close. So the people of California, when given a chance to make their own decisions on how we're going to address the climate crisis, they want to see more climate action. They want to see more investment in climate solutions. It's really about whether our political leaders are going to summon the courage to stand up to big oil.
Well, and on that front, we're just about out of time. But Christina, I wanted to ask you a question we got in from a listener, Carol, in San Francisco, who writes in, what can voters do to hold politicians accountable if they fall for this big oil influence and money? So, Christina, what's your advice to people, how they can get involved and keep up the pressure on politicians to take climate action and not succumb to big oil lobbying and influence?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really old-fashioned statement, but don't be afraid to reach out. Call your representatives at every level of government, state, federal, and local. Local action is very important, but there's a lot of things that are trying to move right now, and it's very important to let your representatives know how you feel. We know with repeated polling, as Ryan mentioned, that most Californians, more than three quarters or approximately three quarters of Californians, want climate action. And so let your electeds know. You know, I'd also add to what Ryan mentioned about lost opportunity costs. Part of their effort is to convince us that we have no other alternatives. When the technology is there, the main problem we have is the lack of political will. There is technology for more efficient, not just cleaner, but less costly, more economical energy. So we can have a better tomorrow. We can do this, but we just have to convince our legislators that this is what we want.
And I'd also note for listeners, if you want to find out which legislators are accepting money from big oil, you can look at the California Environmental Scorecard, which started tracking that information at the turn of the decade here. But that's all the time we have, unfortunately, for this segment. A lot more we could talk about, but I just want to thank you both for joining us. Ryan Schlieder, Communications Director for the Climate Center, working to build the movement for a climate-safe California. Thanks for joining us on your call.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And Christina Scaringe, the California Climate Policy Director at the Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute. Christina, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And coming up next, we're going to talk about how Trump and Musk's federal funding and hiring freezes could leave California and the American West vulnerable to catastrophic wildfires. That's coming up just after this short break here on Your Calls One Planet series.